Hi, I'm Joe Wegman, the pharma therapist, and I'd like to welcome you to this audio presentation entitled Medicating the Split Mind, Schizophrenia and the Psychotic Spectrum Disorders. Let's begin with a brief introduction. In Surviving Schizophrenia, E. Fuller Torrey, M.D., recounts a conversation in which he told a woman that her daughter had schizophrenia. "Anything but that," the woman replied in horror. Why couldn't she have leukemia or some other disease? Dr. Torrey reassured the mother that schizophrenia was much more treatable than a cancer that might cost the girl her life. Yet the woman answered sadly, "I would still prefer that my daughter had leukemia." Such is the stigma that this psychiatric disorder carries, made worse by the way our society treats those afflicted with it. According to the National Institute of Mental Health, approximately 2.2 million Americans are diagnosed with schizophrenia at any given time, with almost a million of those failing to receive adequate treatment. An alarming number of homeless people suffer from schizophrenia, perhaps as high as 40%, say some statistics, and are likely to be rotated among the streets, shelters, emergency rooms, public psychiatric assistance programs, and even the jails. To be sure, those suffering from schizophrenia can be disturbing. They hear voices, experience hallucinations, speak incoherently, break out in senseless laughter, weep and rage without provocation, or are catatonic. Prior to 1954, when Thorazine was approved in the United States for psychiatric treatment, these individuals were certainly feared. Because society couldn't make sense of schizophrenics' behavior, they were routinely confined to asylums. Little was known about their effective treatment or rehabilitation. But today, as more has been learned about the brain, nutrition, genetics, environmental factors, and of course new medications and other therapies, the outlook for treating schizophrenia has improved markedly. While the DSM-4-TR no longer uses the terms primary and secondary psychoses, for diagnostic purposes, clinicians still use certain criteria to determine which types of psychotic disorders are being presented. More specifically, when the only pathology is the psychotic disorder itself, it is known as a primary psychosis. When the symptoms are a result of a general medical condition or are substance-induced, it is known as a secondary psychosis. Also, a distinction is made between psychosis and schizophrenia. Psychosis is a general term that describes psychotic features, whereas schizophrenia is a type of psychosis. Let's discuss the major psychotic spectrum disorders, beginning with brief psychotic disorder. This is a psychosis that has a rapid onset and generally follows an identifiable stressor. It's characterized by emotional turmoil, mood changes, and confusion, along with the presence of one or more schizophrenic symptoms. Brief psychotic disorder is time-limited, lasting at least one day, but no more than one month. Next is delusional disorder. This involves the creation of something elaborate, non-bizarre delusions, something that could be true, but likely isn't. For example, the person believes that their husband or wife is having an affair, when in fact the person is faithful. The delusion consumes the lives of these individuals as they become utterly convinced that what they believe is actually happening, despite evidence to the contrary. Schizoaffective disorder. With this condition, a person exhibits features of both schizophrenia, such as delusions, hallucinations, and thought distortion, and a mood component, such as depression or mania. The diagnosis is made when the person has features of both illnesses, but does not meet criteria for either schizophrenia or a mood disorder alone. For this reason, achieving diagnostic accuracy is quite difficult. Schizophreniform disorder. This is often referred to as a short episode of schizophrenia. Symptoms are similar to those of schizophrenia. They last longer than 1 month, but less than 6 months. Roughly half of all those diagnosed with schizophreniform disorder are subsequently diagnosed with schizophrenia. Schizophrenia. The granddaddy of the psychotic spectrum disorders, schizophrenia involves a psychotic phase characterized by prominent psychotic features, such as delusions, hallucinations, and gross impairment in reality testing. By definition, this psychotic phase must last for at least 1 month. Schizophrenia also causes social, occupational, and other vocational functional impairment that must last for at least 6 months. Evidence suggests that schizophrenia has a significant genetic component. Its onset is also considerably influenced by psychosocial and environmental factors, as well as by stressors. This cruel and chronically debilitating disorder affects approximately 1% of the U.S. population and is a leading cause of disability. Schizophrenia affects men and women differently. For men, the adult onset age is typically 18 to 20 years, while for women, it is typically in the mid-20s. Adolescent age onset typically occurs between the ages of 11 and 15 for both boys and girls. Childhood onset schizophrenia is considered rare, with a rate of probability less than 1 in 10,000. Because it is so rare, a detailed history is essential to confirm diagnostic accuracy. Approximately 85% of older adults with schizophrenia live in communities with support. 13% reside in nursing homes, 1% in state or county hospitals, and 0.5% in veterans hospitals. Positive symptoms, delusions, hallucinations, disorganization, improve with age. Negative symptoms, apathy, anhedonia, avolition, also improve with age. Cognitive symptoms, incoherence, loose associations, informational processing impairment, worsen with age. Quality of life in adults with major mental illnesses such as schizophrenia is lower than in unimpaired controls, but differences are small. Psychosocial functional capacity is highly variable among people with schizophrenia. Functioning is dependent upon environmental circumstances. The better the environmental living conditions, the higher the level of functioning, support system strength, opportunities for daily stimulation, and the extent to which the schizophrenic is stigmatized. There is evidence of better functional outcomes with schizophrenics living in underdeveloped countries where family support systems are strong and well integrated, and roles of family members are simpler. 10 national and international studies spanning a period of 20 to 30 years indicate that recovery is possible for at least 50% of people with schizophrenia. Etiology. Now, from a neurophysiological perspective, several neurotransmitters, most notably dopamine and glutamate, have been implicated in the development of schizophrenia. The hyperactivity of dopamine in the limbic system pathway is a consistent finding. The hypofunction of glutamate could also be responsible for certain aspects of schizophrenia. Diagnosing schizophrenia or any of its associated subtypes is difficult for several reasons. The disorder is complex, symptoms may appear only briefly, and symptoms may be present in conjunction with other disorders. Symptom domains of schizophrenia. Positive symptoms. Positive symptoms are not positive in the ordinary sense of the word. They are described as such because they are the active, observable, and treatable symptoms of the disorder. These include both delusions, false fixed beliefs held with conviction, and hallucinations, including auditory, visual, and other false and abnormal perceptions. Negative symptoms are those that negate or take away something from the schizophrenic's core personality. These include blunted affect, which can manifest as a type of masked, expressionless look, emotional withdrawal, passivity and apathy, anhedonia, or the inability to experience pleasure. Cognitive symptoms. Examples of neurocognitive deficits include impaired executive function, poor problem solving, reduced capacity to accommodate and assimilate new information, attention deficits, impaired memory function, impaired informational processing. In addition, schizophrenics can become combative, sometimes in conjunction with fear, as a result of hallucinations and delusional or confusing thoughts. This aggression can manifest itself in both verbal and physical attacks, acting out sexually, self-mutilation, and suicide attempts. About half of all schizophrenics attempt suicide as a result of command delusions, hallucinations, or major depression, and 10% of them eventually succeed. Now let's discuss some of the medical disorders influencing psychotic features. Medical disorders that can influence psychotic manifestations must be ruled out in order to make an accurate diagnosis of schizophrenia. These medical disorders include infections, tumors, end-stage renal disease, hypoglycemia, dementias, stroke, head injuries, vitamin deficiencies, particularly thiamine, which is vitamin B1. Now let's discuss drugs influencing psychotic features. Cannabis or marijuana, amphetamines, hallucinogens, alcohol, opiates. Is recovery attainable in schizophrenia? Well, the answer to this question has a lot to do with how recovery is defined. Currently, there is no agreed-upon definition of recovery pertaining to someone with schizophrenia or a related persistent psychotic disorder. A large part of the current difficulties arise from the lack of precision in some of the terminology, which then creates misunderstanding and unnecessary controversy. To make matters even more complicated, right now there is no consensus among researchers as to whether schizophrenia is best characterized as a progressive disorder whose natural history is to get worse with time, or a neurodevelopmental problem that, while serious, is not progressive. If the field cannot come to agreement on this issue, this uncertainty creates many challenges in helping clinicians formulate appropriate long-term treatment plans. Antipsychotic medications. The modern era for the treatment of psychotic disorders commenced in the early 1950s when Thorazine was found to be an effective treatment for patients with schizophrenia. Numerous other antipsychotics were then developed and released as treatments for those suffering from psychosis. Today, medication management remains the mainstay of treatment for the psychotic disorders. How antipsychotic medications work. Now, all antipsychotic medications block dopamine receptors in the central nervous system. The blocking actions on dopamine receptors in the limbic system are thought to underlie the effectiveness of these agents in managing the positive symptoms of schizophrenia. However, because of their actions on a number of neurotransmitter systems, a veritable host of side effects may emerge. These are powerful drugs, and like all medications, they have both their benefits and risks. When these drugs are effective, the patient feels more relaxed, less fearful, more confident, and better able to concentrate. Thought distortion, mood, and sleep patterns may also improve. Antipsychotics may or may not be sedating, depending on product selection. Antipsychotic medications fall into two main categories: the older conventional agents and the newer atypical agents. Let's look at the conventional agents first. The first antipsychotic to emerge on the U.S. drug market was Thorazine in 1952. Others followed, including Haldol, Navane, Stelazine. Today, these first-generation medications are no longer considered the agents of choice for treating psychotic manifestations, having given way over the past several years to the newer atypical or second-generation antipsychotics. All of these first-generation agents are effective in treating mania, but ineffective in managing bipolar depression. Conventional antipsychotics fell out of favor due to pivotal shortcomings, two in particular. First, they are responsible for a group of neurological side effects known as the extrapyramidal side effects, EPS. Second, approximately 20% of adult schizophrenics are unresponsive to conventional antipsychotics. Atypical antipsychotic agents. Over the past 17 years, a new generation of agents has emerged. These so-called atypical or second-generation medications were developed to meet the treatment needs of those unresponsive to the conventional agents and to improve the overall tolerability of antipsychotic use. Side effects of the conventional agents. As stated earlier, extrapyramidal symptoms, EPS, refers to a neurological side effect of antipsychotic drugs, and they are common with the use of the conventional agents. Those occurring most often include dystonia, the most common manifestation of EPS, It is characterized by muscle tightening in the neck and shoulders, accompanied by spasms. Parkinson's symptoms produces muscle rigidity, mask-like facies, tremor, shuffling gait, and diminished arm swing. Akathisia. This type of EPS is characterized by motor restlessness, a need to move, and an inability to sit still. Tardive dyskinesia. Though not a type of EPS, it is a most feared adverse effect. It is characterized by involuntary facial movements, including the tongue, eyes, lips, and face. Tardive dyskinesia is generally associated with long-term use of conventional antipsychotics. Once present, it is considered irreversible, although some patients show a slow remission of symptoms over time. When an EPS develops, one treatment is to lower the dosage of the offending drug, but a pharmacological treatment can also be utilized. Agents such as Benadryl and Cogentin can be administered either orally or intramuscularly. Other side effects of the conventional agents may include dry mouth, blurred vision, constipation, sedation, and memory problems, orthostatic hypotension, a drop in standing blood pressure, weight gain, particularly with Thorazine, grand mal seizures, increased levels of prolactin, a hormone related to growth hormone, neuroleptic malignant syndrome, which is the possible emergence of a high fever when these agents are used. More about atypical antipsychotic agents. The term atypical helps differentiate these antipsychotics from the older conventional ones. More important, however, is that the atypicals are not a single homogeneous class of drugs. Instead, they differ from one another with respect to receptor affinity, effectiveness, and side effects. Also, because of their blocking agents on both dopamine and a specific serotonin receptor subtype, these agents carry a lower risk of extrapyramidal side effects and tardive dyskinesia. All of the atypicals are approved for the treatment of bipolar mania. However, effectiveness varies considerably from patient to patient, depending on symptomatic circumstances. Currently, there are 10 atypical antipsychotics available on the U.S. drug market. Let's start with Clozaril. Introduced in 1990, this was the first of the atypical medications and was considered a godsend by otherwise treatment-resistant patients. Clozaril is the prototype to this day, considered to be the most effective but also the most dangerous because of potentially serious agranulocytosis. It is also FDA-approved for the management of recurrent suicidal behavior in schizophrenics. There is a high risk for the development of metabolic syndrome with Clozaril. Metabolic syndrome includes the possible emergence of type 2 diabetes, rising levels of cholesterol, as well as rising lipid levels. Risperdal. This medication is well accepted for the treatment of agitation and aggression in dementia and in bipolar disorders. It is FDA approved for minimizing temper tantrums, aggression, and self-injury associated with autism, as well as disruptive behavior disorders in children and adolescents. Risperdal gained FDA approval in 2007 for the treatment of schizophrenia in adolescents ages 13 to 17. It is available in a long-acting injection formulation named Risperdal Consta. Zyprexa. This drug has documented efficacy as an augmenting agent to SSRI antidepressants in non-psychotic, treatment-resistant major depressive disorder. It was the first atypical antipsychotic approved for the treatment of acute bipolar mania and provides rapid calming action for agitation. It generally produces the most weight gain among the atypicals. Zyprexa is well accepted in difficult psychotic cases. The drug is approved in teens for bipolar disorder and schizophrenia. Seroquel. Studies support the use of this drug for the management of aggressive, cognitive, and affective symptoms of schizophrenia. It is effective in the treatment of bipolar depression. There is essentially no EPS or tardive dyskinesia with this medication. It is also catching on as a treatment for insomnia, aggressive outbursts, and, most recently, traumatic nightmares associated with post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD. Seroquel is approved for use in teens. Geodon. This is the least likely of the atypicals to cause weight gain, and it is also the least sedating. Its unique pharmacological profile suggests potential advantage for associated anxiety and depression, although the drug is associated with agitation at lower doses. But because Geodon has been linked to cases of possibly fatal cardiac arrhythmia, it is not a first-line treatment of choice. A thorough cardiac workup is recommended before use. Geodon is available as an intramuscular injection. Abilify. Referred to as the miracle drug of the new millennium, it is becoming well established as an effective treatment for a number of disorders. Although its antipsychotic efficacy does not rival that of other second-generation antipsychotics, Abilify is often employed in managing the aggressive outbursts of intellectually disabled children. It is also used to treat Tourette's syndrome and is now approved as an augmenting agent to traditional antidepressants in treatment-resistant unipolar depression. Research is robust for this medication in the management of bipolar depression. Abilify is associated with minimal weight gain and has few side effects. The drug was approved by the FDA in 2007 for the treatment of schizophrenia in adolescents ages 13 to 17. Invega. Invega, released in 2007, is an active metabolite of risperdal. Because its delivery system to the bloodstream allows for extended action, 24 hours, it can be dosed once daily. Reputable clinical studies indicate that Invega has no clear therapeutic advantages over risperdal, or for that matter, the other atypicals. Similar to Geodon, it also carries some cardiac risk and is metabolized primarily by the kidneys, so it is not associated with as many potential interactions. Janssen, the manufacturer of Invega and risperdal, stopped issuing risperdal samples in June 2008 due to patent expiration. Fanapt. After receiving a non-approvable letter from the FDA in July 2008, Vanda Pharmaceuticals inexplicably gained FDA approval for this medication in May 2009. Fanapt has actually been 15 years in the making, and its ownership has been handed off back and forth among several companies during this span of time. Claims that this antipsychotic is novel compared to other second-generation agents noted above are false. At best, Fanapt is another me-too antipsychotic. Safras. Safras was FDA approved for bipolar disorder and schizophrenia in August 2009. It is currently available only as a sublingual tablet. It is still far too early to assess the claims that Safras does indeed improve negative, cognitive, and affective symptom domains, more so than its competitors. The drug is associated with elevated levels of EPS, comparable to that of the conventional or first-generation antipsychotics. Schering Plough, now under the Merck umbrella, actually hired a specialty sales force to specifically target psychiatrists to prescribe this new antipsychotic. Latuda. The most recent entry into the second-generation antipsychotic mix is Latuda. The drug maker, Sunovion Pharmaceuticals, announced FDA approval of this atypical antipsychotic in October 2010. Latuda is indicated for the treatment of adults with schizophrenia and possesses no novel characteristics that would bring the drug any significant clinical attention. Add it to the list of Me Too new antipsychotics. Side effects of the atypical agents. In general, the side effects of the atypical agents are more benign than those of the older conventional agents. As mentioned previously, there is less EPS and a lower risk of tardive dyskinesia. The most common side effects of the atypicals are weight gain, sedation, insomnia, agitation, constipation, and dry mouth. However, both Zyprexa and Clozaril have been linked to an increased risk of type 2 diabetes, and an additional risk of increasing triglycerides and cholesterol. Geodon and Abilify carry a low risk for both diabetes and worsening triglyceride and cholesterol levels. Metabolic syndrome issues have yet to be adequately established with regard to the newer atypical antipsychotics just discussed above. Effective treatment of schizophrenia continues to be elusive. Reliable, valid studies failed to demonstrate that negative symptoms and cognitive problems are responding to any of our present medications, creating a genuine dilemma for both clinicians and patients. What you, your clients, and family members need to know. Schizophrenia and medication noncompliance go hand in hand. It's no secret to those of us that work in the mental health arena that schizophrenics often relapse to the active, observable symptoms of schizophrenia, delusions, hallucinations, exaggeration, disorganization, due to medication noncompliance. The three primary reasons for this are as follows. Number one, in an active psychotic state, noncompliance is fueled by paranoia, which dictates that medication is some form of poison or mind control. Why take poison or something that will manipulate the mind? Number two, another piece of the schizophrenic's thought puzzle is that medication has curative powers. Medication is supposed to fix the problem, isn't it? Numbers 1 and 2 are influenced by poor reality testing, which in turn leads to illogical conclusions. Number 3. Antipsychotics are fraught with side effects. This is true, and there is nothing irrational or illogical about giving up on medication that causes weight gain, marked sedation, type 2 diabetes, the potential for rising levels of cholesterol and triglycerides, and movement disorders. Noncompliance due to side effects, I can understand. These medications are just plain awful for the most part. Regardless of the reasons, the risks of antipsychotic noncompliance have to be addressed. Continued relapse to active psychotic features is a recipe for potentially serious consequences for both the schizophrenic and his or her family. This is why it is so important to get the family involved in treatment. Family members are our de facto healthcare specialists and are the clinician's first-line defense against symptom reemergence. Those closest to the affected individual should be made aware of the therapeutic benefits of medication, as well as the adverse effects. Consistently, family members prove to be the clinician's most reliable ally when it comes to challenging the schizophrenic's irrational beliefs regarding medication and increasing medication compliance. Use them. Unapproved use of antipsychotics, an ever-growing concern. In 1996, the three second-generation antipsychotics FDA approved at that time, Clozaril, Risperdal, and Zyprexa, were prescribed for patients with anxiety disorders in 10% of office visits. The bulk of the prescribing for anxiety was with Risperdal and Zyprexa, because Clozaril was not and still isn't considered a first-line agent of choice due to potentially serious concerns with agranulocytosis. A decade later, in 2006, prescribing had more than doubled for the treatment of anxiety despite absolutely no evidence that antipsychotics are effective for anxiety disorders, and clear evidence that this psychotropic class is associated with severe and even life-threatening side effects. And this mass overprescribing was done off-label, mind you. Atypical antipsychotics have clawed their way to $15 billion in sales per year, despite the fact that much of the prescribing is unsupported by scientific evidence, lacks clear rationale, and is bringing obesity and its attendant risks more to the problematic forefront. This is not an indictment of this psychotropic medication class. Used appropriately, antipsychotics are a godsend to the management of the psychotic spectrum disorders. In fact, acute psychotic features could not be managed effectively without them. But bestsellers? That's a bit much. Antipsychotic risk. Antipsychotics are often used in dementia patients with associated symptoms of agitation, irritability, and disruptive behavior. Although the FDA, several years ago, issued a black box warning outlining an increased risk of sudden death when used in this special population group. The risk of death in dementia patients utilizing antipsychotics varies rather widely, depending on the agent employed, according to a study published online in the British Medical Journal in late February 2012. The study examined 75,000 nursing home patients with dementia for possible risk of death within 6 months of the initiation of antipsychotic medication. The study looked at Haldol, Risperdal, and Seroquel in particular. Patients placed on Haldol demonstrated a doubling in their risk of mortality compared with those placed on Risperdal, while Seroquel users were significantly less likely to expire compared to Risperdal users. Seroquel, although seemingly safer than others in this sample, didn't work as well in dementia patients. So here's a rule of thumb. Non-drug intervention strategies should always be utilized first in elderly dementia patients. Now here's a case study. It's entitled, Schizophrenia, The Voices Were Telling Me. Leonard is a 22-year-old homeless man who recently was arrested for bathing nude in a fountain adjacent to an upscale hotel. The police have transported Leonard to a private psychiatric facility at which you are a clinical social worker, and his case is referred to you. It is difficult to obtain a clear history from Leonard because he rambles incessantly, often changing the subject while making bizarre and incoherent statements. He is able to report, however, that during the last month he has been generally unable to sleep, and that when he did sleep, he often experienced what he calls strange dreams. Leonard appears emaciated and reeks of alcohol. When asked about his arrest, Leonard states that he simply found the hotel fountain a convenient location for a bath. Leonard admits to hearing voices over the past few weeks, and he reports that on the day he was arrested, the voices were telling him to be sure to bathe the feet of all the passers-by, because this was Holy Week. He explains that he was getting ready to do just that when someone from the hotel reported me. Because of Leonard's indigent status, your facility's case management department asks you to refer Leonard to a state-operated psychiatric hospital. After a consultation with a psychiatrist at the state facility, you are made aware that Leonard is well known to the staff. The psychiatrist mentions that Leonard is routinely treated with psychiatric medication and that upon symptom remission, he is released. The doctor adds that numerous attempts to locate any of Leonard's family members or friends have failed, as have all attempts to locate placement for him, because he doesn't follow the rules. The doctor concludes by saying that Leonard is one of the facility's many revolving door patients that they expect to see repeatedly over time. Diagnostic considerations. Given that Leonard is well known to the staff at the state psychiatric facility, he had previously been diagnosed with chronic paranoid schizophrenia. Leonard's psychotic symptoms improved markedly on Risperdal in the past, so the attending psychiatrist decided to begin with 2 milligrams in divided doses on day 1 of treatment. The dosing regimen was increased by 2 milligrams per day to a total daily dose of 8 milligrams over a 4-day course of administration. Treatment course. Leonard remained in the hospital for another 3 days and then was discharged on 8 milligrams of Risperdal per day after demonstrating much symptom improvement. Leonard's prognosis for maintaining symptom remission was poor, however, given his tendencies toward medication noncompliance after getting better and his decision to remain homeless. Here's a little bit about the author. I'm Joe Wegman, and I'm a licensed clinical pharmacist and clinical social worker with more than 30 years of experience in the field of psychopharmacology. My diverse professional background in psychopharmacology and counseling affords me a unique perspective on medication management issues. In addition to consulting with numerous psychiatric facilities, I've presented psychopharmacology seminars to thousands of clinicians in 46 states. My book, Psychopharmacology, Straight Talk on Mental Health Medications, which is now available in its second edition, can be obtained at www.pesi.com/bookstore. Again, that's www.pesi.com/bookstore, and also at amazon.com. You can visit me online at The Pharmatherapist. That's www.pharmatherapist.com, www.pharmatherapist.com. therapist.com. Thanks for joining me on this audio presentation. I appreciate your listening.